The only thing better than MVP discourse is two good friends having MVP discourse. And on this episode of Baseball Barbercast, you'll get exactly that.
That's what people come to this show for, and we will deliver our hottest takes about Aaron Judge, Bobby Witt Jr., Shohei Ohtani, and Francisco Lindor, and maybe even some bonus good baseball players. And then we will talk about the first place Kansas City Royals. It's Wednesday. It's Baseball Barbercast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world, relatively underwhelmed by Danny Jansen. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Danny Jansen did not make history. History made Danny Jansen.
Interesting place to start. We are going to get to Danny Jansen and a grab bag of topics around the traps, as you like to say, Jake Mintz. We're going to try and pack in a lot to this Wednesday show, this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbercast. In fact, we're going to pack in so much, we're even going to talk about another sport, as the fantasy football season is here, and we have a team, and we are excited to talk about it, all thanks to our wonderful producer, Andrew Hartz. More on that later. But we are going to do the first part of this show talking about some MVP discourse that has bubbled up in recent days. Now, obviously, this is something that as we come down the last final few months of the season, we start thinking about awards and we start thinking about, okay, what does it mean if this guy wins another MVP or this guy wins his first MVP and who's in the mix and is there a race and stuff like that? And we wanted to take a pause here. We kind of teased this on Monday because we wanted to push Francisco Lindor a little bit to the side and save it for today. But we are entering a stage here where there is, once again, and we have this most seasons, where two candidates emerge and you have one side of the baseball internet saying, oh, you're an absolute idiot if you don't think it's this guy. And then you have the other side saying, like, oh, how is this even a question? It's obviously this guy. And that is obviously ripe for podcast discussion. So we are going to get into that. And then we are going to talk about one of the teams that one of these players plays for. And that's the Kansas City Royals. I saw them in Cleveland this week. And by the time you are listening to this, it is possible that they have mopped the Cleveland Guardians in Cleveland. So, but even if they lose that game, they have been one of the best teams in baseball. I believe the best team in the AL since the All-Star break. So we're going to talk about the Royals as well. But Jake, let's stick with the MVP stuff because we are at the point now where people are kind of drawing their lines in the sand here and saying, this is what I believe, and if you disagree with me, shame on you. So where would you like to start this conversation? Do you want to start in the AL or the NL?
I would like to start by handicapping the field. So you mentioned four baseball players' names. Aaron Judge, Bobby Witt Jr., Shohei Ohtani, and Francisco Lindor. And I think what I would like to first say is that both Aaron Judge and Bobby Witt Jr. would be the National League MVP, runaway, no conversation, no questions asked, in my opinion. The two leagues are just a construct. I mean, we're all a construct. This is baseball doesn't actually matter. Maybe I'm getting too meta for a Wednesday morning. But what I'm trying to say is Bobby Witt Jr. and Aaron Judge just happening to be in the same league doesn't make their seasons any different. Bobby Witt Jr. is having one of the greatest seasons of all time as a shortstop. And yet I believe that Aaron Judge should be the MVP. And multiple things can be true. So I just think it's important to look at these two conversations. I understand that they are separate at the end of the day. But I just think like being like, oh, Bobby Witt Jr. and Aaron Judge is almost like a level above the Lindor-Ohtani conversation.
Sure. So then we'll start in the American League then. And I know that part of it too is now that we have, you know, a balanced schedule, it's not necessarily the same thing as the American League players are competing against majority American League teams. And it's still majority, but not as heavy as it was before. So it felt like there were a little bit of difference, obviously, with the DH. You had different rules for a while and all these things. But now that it's all balanced, it is just like what league you happen to be in. And we could just do it like, I mean, you know, basketball, right? Basketball and the or I don't even know, football.
Yes.
Yeah, football,
yes.
I think, right? It's just one MVP, right? So it's already unique in that sense relative to some other sports that we have multiple. But I don't really want to change that. I like being able to talk about multiple of these things in one season. I think that that is fun. So if we focus on those two, I mean, to me, what which I kind of use as the intro, the degree to which people just refer to anything as obvious is unnecessary. And that's the part where it's like, listen, we should be, I think, grateful that we get to have these conversations, these comparisons. And I think that these debates are more interesting than even like a Hall of Fame discussion, because all that's done. Whereas this is every day, one of them is doing something where they're making you think like, oh my God, how can you vote against this guy, right? And I'm sitting there on Monday at the doubleheader in Cleveland, and I see Bobby Witt Jr. hit a go-ahead home run in the eighth after he stole his 27th base earlier, and he's hitting 420 since the All-Star break, which is like a top five mark ever. And I'm just like, how does it get better than this? And then I turn on the TV, and there's Aaron Judge hitting another home run and robbing multiple home runs at center. And I'm like, all right, well, how's it better than that guy? And so ultimately, I think from a voting standpoint, it's probably there's going to be human dynamics with this too, not just who you ended up seeing. You know, all the voters who are in the BBWA are seeing these players different numbers of times, and that can impact it. And also there's voting fatigue sometimes. This has happened in other sports where it's like, okay, is Aaron Judge that much better? Do I really want to vote for him? Or does it feel like this is the year that Bobby Witt Jr. became one of the best players in baseball? And so all those things, I think, factor into it. And I don't think all those things are valid, in my opinion.
Let's just read the lines before we continue. So as of this morning, Wednesday, August 28th, Aaron Judge, what's his middle name? James. Aaron James Judge has a .333 batting average, a .465 on base percentage, and a .732 slug that is good for a .1197 OPS, which is 129 points above league average adjusted. He has 51 balls hit over the fence. 51 times he has sent a baseball hurtling into the seats. That is what we call a good season. Bobby Witt Jr. is no schlub. He is slashing .346, .399, .614, good for a .1013 OPS. But the thing that Bobby Witt Jr. does that Aaron Judge does not, well, there are two. One is that he steals bases. He has 27 of those so far this season. And the other is that he plays shortstop. And he plays shortstop quite well. And because shortstop is a difficult position to play, arguably the second most difficult position behind catcher, the value bump for Bobby Witt Jr. is significant. He is currently at 8.7 baseball wins above replacement compared to Aaron Judge, who is at a measly 9.7 wins above replacement. Jordan Schusterman, I would vote for Aaron Judge. I think he is the best hitter we have. He's having like the best offensive season we've seen since Barry Bonds. You were just around the Royals. Did you get a sense for how people around the Royals are looking at this? Like, if Judge wins, will they be fuming?
I don't think I didn't ask anything too pointed about that. Although, again, like, it's just so casual. Like, they're really just like, yep, nah, Bobby did it again. So not that they don't appreciate it. But it's already, especially because they've seen him do it now for 3 years, not that he was at this level the last 2 years, but they've watched this ascent to the point where it really is not as much a fresh act. It's more of just like the natural, not conclusion, but just like next step in what Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be as a major leaguer. And so to that point there, it's like, of course. Now, again, if you put it in the larger context and you start thinking about the team, and Bobby Witt Jr. is not the only reason, we'll talk about the Royals more extensively, why they are, you know, on pace to maybe have the greatest, you know, rebound from 100 loss season that we've ever seen, let alone possibly going from, you know, one of these last place to first place, like all these things that the Royals are doing. But Bobby Witt Jr. is a big part of that. And not that he doesn't have some quality teammates, but, you know, when you compare those things also, it's like, okay, you start to have a bigger conversation. But I want to kind of get back to the defense part of it too, because something that I feel like when we talk about Aaron Judge is, are we underrating the center field component of Aaron Judge at this point? Now, I know he's not awesome out there. I don't consider him like a Well, again, this week you would say, of course he's awesome. Look, he just robbed a couple home runs. I think on the whole, is he a plus defensive center fielder? I think some people would say yes. Some people would say probably not. But the fact that he's doing it. Now, in 2022, he did play. It was basically split. I think it was slightly more center, but it was basically split between right. Whereas this year, it's been majority in center field. I mean, he's probably going to end up playing 100 games in center field. And while that is maybe not as valuable as 100 and literally possibly 162 games as a plus defensive shortstop, I do think it's part of the factor, too. I do think, and especially related as we switch it to the Ohtani Lindor conversation here in a bit, that like that's not insignificant that Aaron Judge is going out there and playing at least a reasonable center field while also having one of the greatest offensive seasons we've ever seen. Like that should not go overlooked either, I don't think.
And that's part of the reason why I would vote for Judge. And I feel bad for Bobby Witt Jr. that he's having this season. I feel more skeptical to like stump for Lindor because of the season Bobby Witt Jr. is having, which is maybe unfair because it's like Witt's season is just in every way superior to the season Lindor is having. Not to say Lindor's having a bad season. I mean, he's having an unbelievable season, right? But it's like Witt, if you put him in the National League, like he's winning the MVP, you know? And so there's something that's just a little odd for me about that. And again, maybe that's not fair. So yeah, I would vote for Judge.
Yeah.
I think you would probably vote for Judge. The one thing about this conversation that I want to really harp on is like, what sucks is it just turns into bashing really good players or like picking them apart.
Correct.
Where what this really should be is just celebrating a bunch of people who had an awesome season.
Well, but here's the other thing I will say is it's not over. If we voted tomorrow, I think Aaron Judge would get, 25 plus first place votes. But we got a month to go, and it's close enough to where I think Bobby Witt Jr. does actually have a chance. Like, I really do, because all it takes is Aaron Judge getting walked a ton and just not getting to 60 home runs, and then Bobby Witt Jr., you know, and the Royals winning the division. I mean, I really believe that. I really believe that there is a path here for Bobby Witt Jr. to still win this award. I just, like, you can keep saying, there's a month to go. And there's no reason for me to expect Aaron Judge to slow down. I'm just saying if Aaron Judge suddenly has his April and Bobby Witt Jr. continues and hits 340 and, like, it's not an impossible, the season's just not over. So like, that is my biggest problem with not that we shouldn't have MVP conversations. We're choosing to do that in the end of August on this podcast. Like, it's not that it's not a worthy discussion. I'm just saying the season's not over. So we have,
of course, but like maybe Brent Rooker could hit 50 home runs the rest of the year too. Like, I think we need to happen.
Stop. And this is realistic that I'm saying it's realistic. It's a realistic thing. He is close enough. I'm not, again, I'm voting for Aaron Judge tomorrow too. I'm telling you that it is close enough to where there's a chance.
For there to be
comparing
a chance,
that to Brent Rooker is ridiculous. Come on.
I'm just saying that there's enough runway for a lot of different things to happen. Like, of course you could say this might happen. My point is that if you've watched Aaron Judge play baseball over the last 2 months, I am struggling to envision a world in which he just falls apart this next month and does not win the MVP.
I agree with that. I'm just telling you that 30 games is a lot of games, and we got a while to go.
So. Yeah, it's a lot of games for Aaron Judge to hit a bunch more freaking home runs.
Like, right. And if he does, he will win the award easily, and it will be deserved. That is absolutely there. I'm really just trying to get across that Bobby Witt is just not, he's just not that far behind. That doesn't mean that Aaron Judge is going to slow down. I'm just saying he's not that far behind. That is my main point. So yes, I would vote for Aaron Judge. Yeah.
I think I disagree with that premise. I think
I'd be curious what people think about that, because
he's not a chasm. It's not 1,000 miles behind, but I don't think it is particularly close right now. That is my opinion.
I mean, again, Fangraphs, if you want to, you said Baseball Reference War, Bobby Witt Jr. is on pace for like the highest shortstop Fangraphs War we've seen. And I don't know how many, I guess it's just like A-Rod and nothing else. So it's fine. Again, I'm voting for Judge.
Okay.
You don't got to sell me on Aaron Judge. I'm not.
He's good, dude. He's a good player. He could do a lot of things for your ball club.
That's fine. I'm there. So then let's flip into the National League, because this one is one we have not spent as much time on. And I guess we could start saying, okay, well, Bobby Witt Jr. would win easily in the National League. Okay, so I think I agree with you, but this is more compelling when we talk about Shohei Ohtani, the DH, versus Francisco Lindor. And we've already did a good amount of Ohtani chat at the end of last week and on Monday. So let's bring Lindor into the conversation. Let's make the case for Lindor. Let's try to, okay? Well, why don't you go ahead and try to make the case for Lindor?
Sure. He plays shortstop every day incredibly well. The value of that is immense. There are very few humans that can play an average defensive shortstop at the major league level, let alone people who can play elite shortstop defense. Francisco Lindor is doing that while simultaneously being a well above average hitter. He is not an elite hitter right now. He's not having an elite offensive season. He's having a very, very, very good offensive season. If you go by WRC plus, he is 19th in baseball, right? Very, very, very good. But to do that while playing great defense at a premium position is a true rarity, and he deserves to be recognized and commended for having that skill set, a skill set that arguably, okay, I don't believe what I'm about to say. Ohtani's power speed combo is amazing. Lindor's defense offense combo is better. I actually think I do believe that. Like, it is more impressive to me that Lindor can do the defense and the hitting than Ohtani can do the running and the hitting. Now, yes, Ohtani could do the pitching and the hitting. I'm well aware. I think that is obviously.
But right now, yeah. I mean, and also Lindor is going to go 30-30 for what, the third time in his career? Or I guess the second time in his career. But he's, you know, he did win 30-30 last year and he finished ninth in the MVP. I mean, the fact that this guy's never finished above fifth in MVP voting, you know, he finished ninth in last year. He finished ninth in 2022. He finished ninth in his second year in the league in Cleveland. He finished top six in 2017, 2018. It's been the same. Like, it's been so steady. And I think because of the lack of other candidates, it feels like, and because he's been so obviously the Mets' best player this year, in a way that even recently when we've seen the seasons that Pete was having, or the seasons that even Nimmo was having, that we oddly were not nearly as focused enough on this guy, even though he's been exactly what they could have possibly hoped for since they traded for him and extended him. But it feels like he's the one that is keeping this Mets team feeling like a contender, because it's like, oh, they have Francisco Lindor. Like, of course, that's a good baseball team. that is an achievement in and of itself, because while, yes, they have some other good hitters, we know that. And listen, I don't know if the Mets are going to make the postseason. It's certainly not looking super awesome with the way that the Braves have started playing recently. We know what San Diego and Arizona have done. So it's not looking great. I think their playoff odds are still around 15-20%. Like, they're not totally toast. But I do think that for whatever reason, this is the season where we've been like, hey, wait a minute, especially after he wasn't an all-star and how well he's played since he wasn't an all-star. I mean, earlier this season, I was like, I don't know, like, is he really having that different of a year offensively? And he's picked it up. He's been a way better, just overall productive hitter over the last month and a half or so. And so, yeah, I mean, he's as steady as it comes. And while, you know, comparing that to Ohtani is still a little bit tough, because I just think that Ohtani's ability to kind of elevate even within his Dodgers super team is pretty remarkable as well. I mean, this is also one that, okay, so do you view this as closer as the other one or no?
Yeah. But okay. I also would vote for Ohtani.
Yeah.
Pretty swiftly.
Yeah.
My biggest pause with Ohtani is the DH. I think that playing in the field every day, the wear and tear that has on your body and the energy it sucks out of you, literally, this is going to sound stupid, standing in the sun, right? Oh, go totally. Outside yeah. and stand in the sun for in 15 minute intervals.
Shohei hasn't had to do that all year.
He doesn't have to do that. I talked to Kyle Schwarber. Yeah. I'm in Philly right now. I talked to him yesterday about DHing for a long time. And he was like, I feel healthier than I felt in years. Because you're just not yeah. diving around. Like, your body's not taking that wear and tear. And Ohtani, obviously, it's slightly different because he's a pitcher. Right? But
right. And he's rehabbing. Yeah.
Sure. He's rehabbing. But the DH element of it does give me pause. That being said, I think Ohtani saying, eh, I'm going to run this year, and then stealing 40 bags is preposterous. It's ridiculous. It is outrageous. And I think it's easy to forget what we were saying about Shohei Ohtani in March, in late March. The Ipe stuff. His season, the excellence of his season, has taken that out of the conversation completely. Do you remember yeah. it was the biggest story oh, yeah. in sports for a week?
Yeah.
Ipe and Ohtani. Yeah. And Ohtani has just been so more good than, that yeah. it just hasn't been talked about. And you could imagine a world where if he was substandard at all, where it was like, oh man, is it affecting him? Is it? Nope. Not at all. Doesn't matter. 41 bombs, 40 bags. I would vote for Ohtani. Now again,
yeah.
I would give the National League MVP to Bobby Witt Jr. right now. I know we can't do that. I would also like to fly.
No, we can't.
But I can't.
Yeah, I mean, the other, I mean, it's a good point to just remember what he was dealing with.
How is this going to affect Ohtani? Not at all, like,
well,
it appears.
Well, he's going to be even better.
Well,
yeah,
it appears that Will Ireton also knows English and Japanese.
Yeah. Also, like, also the, like, the DH thing is interesting because it's the spirit of it is he's, it's like, oh, he's a DH, but like, he's not a DH.
No.
Like, he is a DH because he needs to be a DH, but not because he's Darren Ruff. You know what I mean? Like it's yeah. that is the position he happens to be playing. Now again, that doesn't mean you can't judge it, you know, use it against him. But I like that he's essentially by running and maybe going 50-50, he's kind of gone out of his way to be like to make you forget that he's a DH, which is
I'm
awesome.
Not your normal
I think
DH.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I think that war wise, he's probably gonna end up having the greatest DH season we've ever seen. And yes, of course, there's Edgar seasons and David Ortiz seasons offensively that are comparable to what Ohtani's doing. But yeah, I mean, you add in the speed component and just the base running and what that kind of does for this Dodgers offense, and it's not insignificant. So yeah, I mean, if he goes 50-50, it's not even going to be questioned. It's like, I'm sorry. Already 40-40 probably is enough to make it easy. And you could say, oh, but Lindor 30-30 with a short stuff. This is fine. But I think, yeah. 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 I don't know. I think Ohtani is farther ahead than Judge is ahead of Witt. So.
Okay.
Which I think is what you said. But
anyway. I think you're underrating Aaron Judge and you think he's a bum. All right. Let's take a break. And when we get back, as Jordan shakes his head, when we get back, we will talk about Bobby Witt Jr.'s Kansas City Royals and bop around the track. And welcome back to Baseball Arbitcast, Jake and Stuart Schusterman. So just very quickly, one more Ohtani thing. I have in front of me on Fangraphs the most steals by a designated hitter.
Oh, I mean, he set this record like a month and a half ago, but it's
so
also kind of goofy
by primary position, right?
Yeah,
whatever
yeah,
that I, means.
Yeah,
the number one stolen base season by a designated hitter is held by Lidom legend Luis Polonia, who stole 51 bags in 1992. How many home runs did Luis Polonia hit that season? Zero. He hit zero home runs as the DH for the 1992 California Angels. 51 bags, zero bobs. Otani is a freak. All right, enough about players. Let's talk teams. You were in Cleveland this week. Cleveland rocks.
Yes.
To see the Kansas City Royals. Not right now. Kansas City Royals took the first three games of that series. There's one more today. They are tied atop the division. You sat through a doubleheader of Royals Guardians baseball. Share with me your takeaways.
So, of course, we're recording this on Wednesday morning. The Royals will be going for the mop this afternoon, and that is because they won both games of the doubleheader on Monday and then a rain-delayed mess on Tuesday night, where they managed to put up some runs late. The Royals have, as we record this, they are tied atop the American League Central. Not only have they kept pace and passed the Twins, the defending champs, but they have also caught up to the Guardians, who did have a 10-game lead over Kansas City in the middle of June.
Are you trying to say why have the Guardians gotten the Mariners stick?
No, I'm just telling you what happened. I didn't say anything about the Mariners.
Just saying.
These two teams are very interesting contrast. You have both of them have three very, very, very good hitters, good to great hitters, right? They kind of each have their big three. And they deploy them in different fashion. You have the Guardians big three, which had carried them for much of the first half. That's Kwan, that's Josh Naylor, and that's of course Jose Ramirez. Jose Ramirez has not really slowed down. Josh Naylor and Kwan have. Now, with those two slowing down a little bit recently, this Guardians offense has been struggling in a way that before the season we were very much worried about. Whereas Kansas City, their three of Bobby Witt Jr., Salvador Perez, and Vinny Pasquantino Bobby's only gotten better as the season has gone on. And while Sal had a dip earlier in the summer, he's now back to absolutely dominating. And Vinny, who's had a tough week in Cleveland, has generally been hitting well as well. But that really is what stood out. I mean, which stars showed up, and the fact that the Royals were able to win a game in game one where Cole Reagans was terrible and then left with a hamstring injury. They were able to win that game and hold it down with Lucas Ursic coming in the back with a big Bobby Witt Jr. go-ahead homer late in that game. And then in the second game, where they're starting Alec Marsh, who's their sixth starter, who was bumped for the rotation because they traded for Lorenzen. He comes in and gives them just enough, and they can patch it together. Cleveland's pitching is just not quite good enough. And then they get a grand slam from Sal Perez, two home runs from Salvador Perez, who caught the first game, DH the second game. And it was like, well, like their better players are showing up right now. And the Guardians, are you aware of this doubleheader stat? This is outrageous.
No, just one second. And then yesterday, on Tuesday, Michael Lorenzen gets hurt early on in his start, and the Royals win that game anyway.
Exactly, and that's the thing. And so the Royals are finding ways to win these games that are just the sign of a good team, right? I mean, it's kind of cliche in that sense, but when you see it enough and you see how many things are going wrong and how many kind of fail safes they now have, where it's just like you can just press the Bobby Witt Jr. button, or in this case now you have this guy in Lucas Ursic who has essentially been flawless since they traded for him, and you have Sal Perez who can, you know, deliver you multiple big swings in that second game. They just have enough else going right for them that they're never really out of it, and their pitching is keeping them in it, right? But what's so amazing about that big three, this is the stat that just keeps blowing me away. Bobby Witt Jr. does not want to hit leadoff. It's not his thing, okay? Which is fine. You're not going to tell Bobby Witt Jr. to change what he's doing, right? He's been batting second. They've had Bobby, Sal, Vinny in that 2-3-4. Vinny batting third. Sal, that in some order, basically for 95% of the games. The Royals leadoff hitters rank last in OPS as a unit. Okay. So when you see the Royals RBI and run totals from Bobby Witt, from Vinny, from Sal, all of those guys are on pace for over 100 RBIs, that's with horrific production out of the leadoff spot. Like, that is what they've been working up against. Now, again, Michael Garcia, he looked a little bit better. He had a few hits the other day. Michael Massey has been solid when he's played. But on the whole, the production has not been there at the top. And yet, because those three guys have been so good, it has been a good offense. I've said it all year. Offense is down right now. If you got three good hitters, that's probably enough. And they just have so much of their team working right now at the same time, whereas Cleveland has the opposite. They got Jose Ramirez doing his best. They have a very thin pitching staff, and they're just not getting leads to their bullpen, which is still really good. And yeah, they have maybe the greatest closer on earth in Emmanuel Clase, and so far it just hasn't mattered. He just hasn't pitched very much over the last couple of weeks, and that's been the problem for them. And Kansas City is just, they are playing with a level of confidence that is really, really impressive.
All right, let's move on from the Royals and the NL Central to the rest of the league. There's so much going on in baseball right now. We want to give you a taste of our thoughts on a bunch of different topics, but we don't want to linger too long, as we are often doing. So here's how this is going to go, Jordan. I'm going to say a topic. You're either going to give me a 1 to 2 sentence reaction on the topic, and then I will do the same, or you get one button where you could press each of us get one button where you could say, I want to have a longer conversation about this. Okay.
Okay.
Sounds Shall good. I begin?
Please.
Orioles, Baltimore, last night, Los Angeles, hilarious 3-2 win. Cole Irvin starts for the Orioles. The 5 outs from Mike Bauman, not Mike Bauman. Sorry.
Matt Bowman. Mike Bauman's on like his 5th team.
I know.
I have no thoughts about this because I was asleep. So what you got?
It was out. Yeah. My one sentence is, cannot believe the Orioles won this game. Dodgers are the best team in baseball against changeups. The Orioles threw Cole Irvin out there and he evaded the Lions den long enough. And yeah. Baltimore's bullpen won a ball game. Ramon Urias has been amazing. There you go.
Good for Ramon Urias. That is awesome. His brother, Luis Urias, nowhere to be found.
First time the Orioles have played in LA since 2016.
Oh, there you go. I was going to say that did look like some funky interleague there. Jake, you saw the Phillies beat the Astros last night. I will combine this with the Astros sort of slowing down as the window opened for Seattle. What's your quick reaction from the game last night that you saw?
The Phillies still can't hit a breaking ball. I'm not ready to fire up the Phillies are back cannon. However, Nick Castellanos is outrageously locked in, which is a good thing. Trey Turner has looked locked out, which is not really what that means. The Phillies pitching is still really good. Outrageous stat. The Phillies this season, when their starting pitcher goes 7, they are 30-1. That one loss was the first 7-inning start. They have won 30 consecutive games in which their starter goes at least 7.
That'll work. Mariners cannot relate.
At all.
As last night, Logan Gilbert delivers another gem and they lose a 1-run game to the Rays. And so while their playoff odds remain 20%, to chase down Houston. They're not. I think they're 3.5 back. Should probably win those games when the Astros are getting shut out, because otherwise you ain't going to catch them.
The Astros are not in a great place right now. Ben Gamble's was hit 5th earlier this week, hit 7th mm-hmm. last night. Mm-hmm. Justin Verlander was better than I thought. His slider command was iffy early on. He really just made one big mistake, which was a hang and breaking ball to Nick Castellanos. Should I press my button here?
We got a lot of topics here. We should talk about the other Astros thing on our list.
Well, I want to talk about Nick Castellanos.
After the game.
But it's more than that. Okay, so I spent a lot of time in the Yankees clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And post game, when Aaron Judge talks, he always makes sure to have his Yankees cap on. And the amount of times that I've looked over at Aaron Judge's locker and, you know, the Yankees PR guy kind of like waves over and Judge goes in his locker, takes the Yankees cap, bends it, puts it on his head and strolls over to the camera. It's like a very classic thing, right? Same thing happens last night with Nick Castellanos, okay? Phillies PR guy's, hey, Nick, you homered, come speak. Nick's shirtless, right? Nick gets up, looks into his locker. You think he's going to put on a shirt. He grabs a like trucker hat with a local roofing company on the front. No shirt, strolls over and does the post-game interview. And just One is not better than the other. Okay. I understand why Aaron Judge like does what he does and the Yankees do what they do. I get it. But just, I was expecting him to like put on a shirt and get a Phillies cap. No, just tosses the trucker hat on top of his head, does the interview shirtless. Hilarious.
And I was going to save this for good for later this week, but while we're talking about that exact press conference, what he said was, I mean, he literally goes there. They're okay. He has, again, he has this big home run against Verlander. And he said what we have all been thinking about Nick Castellanos for years. He said, I do not have an approach. I am going up there. He said, I am literally never going up there thinking I want to walk. He said that. And that sounds a lot better after you have hit the home run to help your team win the game. But it is an incredible reminder of how talented this guy is to be able to make it this far doing this way, because many a career have been foiled, have ended before they even get to double A because they don't have an approach. And instead, he is so gifted at putting the bat on the ball that he's been able to do this and admit that he's doing it and continue to succeed to a certain degree. Obviously, at some point, less than what a lot of Phillies fans would hope. But, you know, it again, he is one of a kind, honest, and one of a kind personality.
And he's been really good for a number of months. Jordan, I have this article in front of me from a really wonderful, beautiful writer named Jack K. Mintz, May 4th, 2023, on a website we used to work at. Quote, says Nick Castellanos, I'm always ready to hit. That mentality has always come easiest to me. It's been like batting practice my whole life. You see, I don't look for pitches. Amazing. Just up there hacking. All right, let's move on.
Right.
Astros are scuffling. Mariners take advantage. No.
Well, can we stick with the Astros quickly? Because they signed Jason Hayward. We did not mention Jason Hayward being DFA'd by the Dodgers. They decided they'd rather have Chris Taylor, stick with Andy Pages as kind of
their outfield.
They did
not decide they'd rather have Chris Taylor. They decided they'd rather not have to pay Chris Taylor to not play.
Yeah.
There's more money left on that.
They're paying Chris Taylor a lot more. They have Tommy Edman is back now. Like, Dodgers eternal roster crunch. But him landing in Houston is fascinating. Now, Jason Hayward obviously is a limited player at this point, but the Astros have been searching for a right fielder for quite some time now. You mentioned they have Ben Gamel for some reason. Now, this tracks. This feels like a situation where, with all due respect to Jason Hayward, Jeff Bagwell is probably like, Jason Hayward's available? What are we waiting for? let's do it. This guy's a winner, and he is. Everyone loves Jason Hayward. Now, he's hitting 200 this year, right? I don't know how much better he's been hitting. Right, nope, not really hitting righties any better than he's barely played against lefties. So, but an interesting character to add to the Astros universe at the very least, right? There's a version where Jason Hayward hits a big home run for the Astros in the postseason.
Absolutely.
That in and of itself is news. So that's all I have to say about that.
The Atlanta Braves skeleton crew continues to win baseball games. They blew a 4-0 lead last night and then won in extras anyway. Jordan, one sentence on the Atlanta Braves B team keeping pace with the Phillies.
Shouldn't have buried him. Weird team, but if you wanted the magic of 2021, well, now we'll get it in the form of Gio Urshela and friends. And in that sense, I can't be particularly surprised. But nice to see them win a game last night when Iglesias gives up a run, right? That's a situation where it's like normally that's not part of the recipe for success. But yeah, they might make the National League wildcard race uninteresting.
Three hits last night for Ramon Laureano. Five hit Whit Merrifield on Monday evening. Jordan, the Braves are going to be the sixth team in the National League. They are going to play the Milwaukee Brewers in the first round, and they are going to beat them in two games, and that will be that.
It's so close with the standings that I am not proclaiming any sort of seeding for any of the any of it, whether it's the one seed, whether it's the order of the wildcard teams. Way too early.
Jacob DeGrom pitched last night in the minor leagues.
Sure did.
The best pitcher that never pitches pitched. He was throwing very hard, as he does. He pitched two innings. He struck out two people. He did not allow a hit. He did not walk anybody. Jacob DeGrom back in time to help the Rangers get to October?
No, because the Rangers are 11 games under 500 and are not good. However, I'm excited to watch Jacob DeGrom pitch again. And like, that's tough, right? You are, I see your Rangers on your schedule and you're like, oh, well, they're, I mean, defending champs, but clearly not good. You know, if you're talking about strength of schedule the rest of the way, I don't know who, you know, who they're playing at the end of the season, but you know, there are probably going to be some unlucky teams, including definitely the Seattle Mariners, that are going to have to face Jacob DeGrom at the end of the season.
It's funny you say that, Jordan, because the Seattle Mariners do not really play a team in the playoff hunt in September, except for the Mariners twice. This is This is the Rangers September schedule of who Jacob DeGrom's going to steal dreams from. They play the Yankees three times the first week of September. Will he be back by then? Probably not. Angels, D-backs, Mariners, Blue Jays, Mariners, A's, Angels. So Jacob DeGrom might be the reason the Seattle Mariners don't make the postseason. That is an absolute
He will not be
bummer.
The only reason. He might be a reason, but very I'm true. Excited to watch Jacob DeGrom pitch.
Let's talk about the Washington Nationals, who called up top prospect Dylan Cruz this week. He got his first MLB hit, a double off the base of the wall against Gerrit Cole. Nationals outfield top prospect, double off the base of the wall. Is Dylan Cruz him, Bryce Harper?
Did you see him on the swinging bunt? I don't know if it was before or after the hit, like rip his helmet off. And his hair's longer than it's been, like, that I've ever seen from Dylan Cruz.
He knows what he's doing.
He knows ball. We like Dylan Cruz. If you saw a clip of him, us talking to him about SpongeBob, the Futures Game check-in, he's a cool cat. And I'm excited for people to see Dylan Cruz's dad on TV more, because he's certainly a character. And yeah, exciting times in DC. And let's loop it in with this other topic that I have to mention.
Very quickly on Dylan Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
Very quickly on Dylan Cruz. My brain is broken on Dylan Cruz. I cannot evaluate him because we were very locked into his college season last year, and I watched him hit 480 or whatever the heck. And so I can't give you a real opinion on him. I'm sorry. You have to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. No, I know. It's like when he so rarely looked overmatched. Basically ever in college and even some of the minors where it's like when Nestor Cortes blows him away in his debut, I'm like, what happened? Why didn't he hit that to the moon?
It's like asking the Purdue SID about Zach Edey. It's like, that's not, I don't know what to tell you. But it's NBA prospects.
More importantly, the Nationals beat the Yankees last night. And Patrick Corbin beat Gerrit Cole.
Wow.
And I would say one of my stronger early working at MLB memories is the Patrick, when we worked at MLB, graduating college, you know, in 17, we go work at MLB. A lot of Yankees fans in the office in New York, of course. And just the Patrick Corbin, please sign with the Yankees, you grew up a Yankees fan discourse. There was like, right, it was his wedding or like a, it was some family wedding, either it was his or someone else's, and there was like Yankees fans and people being like talking about how he's going to sign with the Yankees because he grew up in New York, a good Yankees fan. And that alternate timeline, for so many reasons, is just amazing. Twofold, right? One, let's be real. Nationals, probably not winning the World Series without Patrick Corbin, okay? He was outstanding in his first year. However,
If Patrick Corbin, after the 2019 World Series, pulls, like, basically stands up and goes, I don't like this anymore. I'm retiring to go, you know, donate, like, to go dedicate my life to feeding the hungry, which is not really his vibe. But if he had done that,
it'd be great. He would have a lot of money to do that.
If he had done that, he's a Nats legend, a Nats icon, right? If he slips on a banana peel at the parade and never pitches again, his uniform is retired. Like, he's a legend. He lived long enough to see himself become the villain. That's what happened to Patrick Corbin.
I mean, he's been the worst pitcher in baseball for basically 4 years in a row. And now, Jordan, there he was, dominating against the Yankees.
If the 2019 Yankees had Patrick Corbin, maybe they win the World Series. I'm looking at ALCS game four against the Astros. Oh, Masahiro Tanaka is not particularly sharp that afternoon. Could use Pat Corbin.
It's, I'm telling you, it is just a hilarious, hilarious thing. All right, a couple more topics. How about O'Neal Cruz moving to center field?
It's going to be so easy for him to rob home runs. That's probably why. He doesn't even have to jump.
That's interesting. Now, the Pittsburgh center field wall is pretty tall. It's not very Rob friendly. However, this is just a move that while people had kind of speculated that one day O'Neal Cruz might move to the outfield, this is a very strange time to drop this on a player that is very important to you, because O'Neal Cruz said after, like, yeah, no, we haven't talked about this. This is not something I was ever expecting.
And the question is for what, right?
Yeah,
if the Pirates had a can't miss shortstop prospect lingering in AAA that they wanted to have play there in the big leagues, it would make sense. You're moving your most important offensive player to a new position on August 27th so you can have Isaiah Kiner-Falefa play shortstop every day when he's what?
Well, it's that so that you can play Nick Gonzalez and whatever. It doesn't really make it any better. That's my understanding. But I just, at this point in like sort of a lost season, clearly, like if you make this move in the offseason, it's like, oh man, like that's kind of disappointing. But like it feels like it's the kind of thing that you hear 2 days into spring training and you're like, okay, fine. We're done with O'Neal Cruz shortstop. And you go for
it. Well, it feels considered. This feels haphazard.
Exactly. Exactly. Rich Hill is on the Red Sox again. We've already talked about this. This is amazing because he is 44. It is disappointing because he's not on a new team and we want him to tie up in Jackson's record. But it is, I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. This is his fourth time. His fourth time on the Red Sox. I know they finally won last night. But this will very quickly go from, oh my God, Rich Hill, to like Rich Hill giving up a home run when the Red Sox are like clinging on to their postseason hopes. And it's like, well, what are we doing here? Like what is happening? Well, why is this the plan? And so, but respect to him. I just can't believe that he's like, yeah, that's one of our best options right now. It can't be a good thing.
My one sentence, Rich Hill is older than six big league managers right now.
Yes.
Six of them.
Well said. Yeah. Six of them. A couple more. Danny Jansen. Let's just hit that. Danny Jansen played for both teams in the same game. You can't believe it. We have a couple of these things every season where it's like a fun fact. And like, it is great. It is a goofy thing. The box score is outstanding. It is a historic thing. It's just a stars aligning weird moment. No one achieved anything. I guess the credit is to Alex Cora for enabling it, right? Because he could have been like, although part of me kind of wishes that would be even funnier. Like, I would have enjoyed it more if Alex Cora was like, no, Danny Jansen is not playing for us in this game.
I think you hit the nail on the head for me and why I struggled to like get sucked into this story. Because no one did anything. Right? Like, right. There's no right. accomplishment. There's no right. pursuit of a goal. There's no effort. No effort was put in, right?
Like, no. And I feel bad because it's like, it's so interesting. There's some things like this where it's like, this is totally like Jake and Jordan should love this. I'm like, yeah, but like, it's just the thing that happened. Like, it's not even, I don't know. It's weird. I can't quite place it. We're not,
why don't we
like,
care
it is
more?
Funny. I love seeing.
I can't figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's really strange. I'm struggling with that too.
You know what? Maybe it is. Like, I saw a video of Danny Jansen talking about it. Mm-hmm. And like, what do you want Danny Jansen to like? Obviously, you have to ask Danny Jansen about it. But right. Danny Jansen doesn't have anything to say other than, "Oh, it's cool to be a part of baseball history." And there's a part of me too that I feel a little bit bad for Danny Jansen.
Right.
Because he's going to be remembered for this forever. And like, he didn't do anything to accomplish it. Think about how many hours Danny Jansen has put in to being like an average major league catcher.
Right,
and instead we're going to remember him for eternity because he got traded in the middle of a season very conveniently. I don't know, man. Yeah. I don't want to sound
I will say, I think the upside of this, like we're too close to it because it just happened. But the upside of this is really, again, from a huge dork perspective, in 20 years, someone will be on Baseball Reference scrolling through the 2024 Blue Jays or Red Sox box scores, and they will find this, and they will be like, I'm sorry, is this the same player on both teams in the same game? I have versions of that going back and finding box scores from 100 years ago, and I'm like, is this correct?
Related, today is the 4-year anniversary of Amed Rosario hitting a walk-off home run for the Mets in Yankee Stadium in the 7th inning during the 2020 COVID season.
Beautiful. Stuff like that, we love it.
So, but no one, in that sense, no one did anything in that.
No,
like, Rosario hits the homer. Yes, I understand that. Right, but like, right. COVID creates that scenario.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
That fills me with glee, and the Danny Jansen one doesn't tickle me in the same way.
You know, but here, maybe here's really what it is: is that watching Danny Jansen come into the game, I'm not like nothing's happening. Like
it's not funny. It would be funny if he got traded in the middle of the game and had to like change out of his uniform. Right. Like it's funny when Paul DeYoung was traded from the White Sox to the Royals and walked around the stadium.
There's an aesthetic thing that I'm watching that is interesting. And I bring that up because you mentioned the Rosario one and watching the Mets, you know, jump on home plate at Yankee Stadium. That is incredible. Like that is
everyone
a unique
is wearing,
sight.
Everyone's wearing 42 in August.
There's no one there.
It's the 7th.
Okay. Let us know. Are we Baseball Barbecast you have a like on? Are we? It's not like we don't understand it, but it's just an interesting thing. Okay.
Are we being haters?
Yeah. Two more topics, and then we'll take a quick break, and then we'll wrap it up at the end with our fantasy football review. Two more topics. Mike Schilt, Padres manager, going into St. Louis, where he worked for a very long time, and effectively ending the Cardinals season with the first two wins in this. I think this is actually an opportunity. But the Cardinals, who showed brief signs of life last week, are now not really living much. And to have Mike Schilt come in and just kind of show him what's what was appropriate. Mike Schilt having a good season.
I think we're going to have a longer conversation on Friday about Adam Wainwright's tweets.
Oh, okay. I don't know what you're talking about, but we can do that on Friday. And then the last thing also related to managerial stuff is the Angels and Ron Washington held a 90-minute team meeting reporting from Jeff Fletcher. It was not a meeting where he was chewing them out, but it was a, quote, come to Jesus meeting. Now, as Jews, we don't know what that means, but I will say that this is not the first time we've heard of bad teams having big meetings. 90 minutes is a long time. And then the Angels lost again because they're starting Johnny Cueto, bless his heart, in 2024, and the Tigers are playing really well. I think the big picture Angels question is, you extended Perry. And okay, you want to keep the development going and you know, trust that there's something, you know, coalescing at the major league level. But for Wash, I just like I there's only 30 manager jobs, so he's gonna stick around. He's gonna keep doing it. But yeah. It sucks because
you know, screw the big picture. I want to talk about the small picture.
Okay, that's fine.
There is no way that a 90-minute meeting with over presumably 35 to 40 people was productive. There's zero chance, like absolutely no freaking chance. There's no way. There's zero way that is like accomplishing anything at all. 90 minutes. Okay, 5 minutes. There are very rarely full team meetings in Major League Baseball. That's why when they happen, we hear about them, right? There's no way that the Angels have 90 minutes worth of things to be said when, you know, six guys on this roster might be gone in a week. You know, like they might just be bringing up new guys in September. So I think the number one mistake managers make, and obviously Ron Washington knows more about this than I do, is that they overmanage, they overcoach, they just want to do the managing. And I don't think that there's really anything Ron Washington could do right now to make that it's harmful to the Angels, if that makes sense. Right. But I just think it's silly that these guys had to sit through a 90-minute meeting.
Yep, I agree. They are three games behind the Oakland A's. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll return with a few more minutes talking about not baseball. It's fantasy.
Welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbecast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Our previous segment was didn't work. Instead of giving you two sentences about everything, we talked for too long because that is what we do for a living. Before we talk about fantasy football, Jordan, I just want to bring up a theoretical question about the Chicago White Sox that was floating around the Citizens Bank Park press box yesterday. And that question is, well, let me give some background. The 2024 Chicago White Sox stink. They're on pace for one of the worst seasons, if not the worst season in modern baseball history. However, if they were teleported back to 1903, they would go undefeated. Wouldn't even be a question. Davis Martin, we would be giving out the Davis Martin Award. Forget Cy Young. So the question is, in which year going back are the 2024 White Sox the overwhelming World Series favorite? What is the most recent season?
Yeah, so again, it's a version of the conversation we had about Roderick Munoz. At the end of last week's episode, Roderick Munoz didn't have a great time in Coors Field last night. A surprise, surprise. But anyway, that was the conversation of when is Roderick Munoz the Cy Young favorite? How many years do you have to go back? Now, if you expand it to the whole team, right, to your point, we're talking about them in the same sentence as the Cleveland Spiders in 1899. I like this group against the 1899 Cleveland Spiders for sure. What are the advantages, right? It's the physicality. When is the physicality? To me, it's when is the physicality start to better reflect the kinds of players that we have today? And that isn't that long ago, right? I mean, obviously you had outlier athletes in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but it, you know, the Gavin Sheets, you put him in the 40s, he's hitting a lot of home runs. He's going to be hitting a lot of home runs, right? Andrew Vaughn, stuff like that. Luis Robert. Can you imagine the what they would be saying about Luis Robert? And so all of that is, but I am focusing on the offense because I think, yeah, I think the stuff alone on the mound would put them in a pretty good position. I think it's a similar answer to the Roderick Munoz one. I think it's probably, actually, probably closer to the present. I think it's probably the 50s or 60s.
I think it is significantly later than that.
Okay.
The prohibitive
World Series favorite, to be clear, right?
Yes. I think the early 80s is where I'd go. The average fastball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speed. Average fastball velocity in 2005 was 90. The White Sox are averaging 94 right now. Okay. So I do not think that the current White Sox would be very competitive against the 2003 MLB teams, but like, that is a big difference.
Yeah,
for right? sure. Right? And copy and paste, so like, go back to 1987, right? And every White Sox reliever is throwing 10 miles an hour harder than anybody else in baseball. Pitching coach Ethan Katz is just like, throw it down the freaking middle every time. No one's catching up with this.
But here's the difference. Here's the difference. Those hitters, they were putting the ball in play. They weren't striking out 28% of the time like these hitters.
So. The drugged out 1986.
A lot of foul balls in those games. Oh, boy.
The drugged out 1986 Mets have zero chance against Garrett Crochet. Like, absolutely no chance. The funniest response I got to this, Jordan, one professional baseball evaluator responded and said, Andrew Benintendi, if you transported them to 1980, Andrew Benintendi's OPS would go up by 20 points.
Oh my gosh. So that's good. It's good to have a take. Let us know. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. All right. Our final topic, Jake, before we get out of here.
How did it hike?
Football is back. The NFL season begins on Jake's wedding day.
Really?
I think so. Or maybe it starts a couple days before then. But that is week one.
I'm just going to say, if anybody listening to this is coming to my wedding, if I see you watching that football during my wedding, you are not allowed to come to the reception.
To the second wedding? Oh, to the what?
To the reception.
To the reception. So you're saying during the ceremony.
If I see you on your phone during the Tish and Bedeckin, all right? Or the
tuba signing. We're talking to my dad directly, by the way.
Okay? You can check
more
score,
on that in a second. Yeah.
But do not watch the Hud hike.
You don't want to be able to see the field on the phone. I think that's totally fair.
No.
Okay. Football is back. As you all know, we are not the biggest football fans. However, here at Yahoo Sports, football, obviously a big deal. Fantasy football, obviously a big deal. And we were lucky enough to be invited to the Yahoo Sports Fantasy Football League. Now, we were a little bit busy yesterday at the ballpark, so we were unable to participate directly with the draft involving many of the other great podcasts on the Yahoo Sports Podcast Network. However, producer Andrew Hartz, we gave producer Andrew Hartz some vague directions.
No, very detailed pref list.
We looked at the Yahoo Fantasy Football rankings, and we talked about the players whose names we recognize, whose names we just enjoy, whose profiles we know a little bit about just because we're on the internet and people are tweeting about them all the time. And so we said, hey, we would love to have some of these players. And I mean, we could talk about our team here. Thanks again, producer slash, you know, shadow GM Andrew Hartz. I kind of love our team. I like a lot of these guys on this team. Now, I don't know if it's a good team. We'll tweet it out. But
let us know.
Pretty good. We got Lamar, so that's good, right? People like Lamar.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson, who has been has thrown out the first pitch at Orioles games, so I know who that is. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I watched some of the Netflix doc Receiver, and he was in it, and he came across as very interesting.
Yes,
very cool cat.
I've heard good things about Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Marvin Harrison Jr. seems to be like the Vlad Jr. of football.
Right. And I like that one because Marvin Harrison was still playing the last time I played fantasy football. So I was like, he was good then. So presumably his kid is pretty good. We got a gentleman named Ladd McConkey, which is a name I saw during the college football season. I don't know if he's going to be good in the NFL, but I mean, look, the size of this lad. Absolute lad is amazing. So I'm all in on him. So we'll tweet. Again, I think this is a good opportunity for us. Again, we haven't played fantasy football in a long time, but this is a league involving fantasy football experts, involving football experts, involving NFL players, as well as some of the other, you know, podcasts from other sports. So all I'm saying is, obviously, like, beating Nate Tice and Charles McDonald would be, I mean, if you really need any evidence of fantasy football being random nonsense, like, this is it, right? This is our chance to shine.
It's a win-win for the Barbercast boys, okay?
Right.
If we get worked, we can't lose. If we get worked, If we work.
No, if we get worked, blame Andrew Hartz. I mean, our GM just choked the draft.
Yeah, I think we're going to be incredibly active on the trade market.
Dude, I after it finished, I already got an email like, there's a trade that was being proposed. I'm like, didn't the draft finish like 30 seconds ago? Like, what is going on? So that wasn't our trade. I think we had to like approve something. But anyway, we'll see how this goes. But let us know if you follow football. Let us know if you like our team.
How Jordan, I'm saying this to you right now. My wedding. Do not bring up how our fantasy football team is doing, please.
Week one.
Don't do that.
Okay.
Don't tell me at week one.
I'm gonna.
At my wedding.
I won't. Will
Andre
on Friday
Theo
and Saturday.
Sivas.
Yes. Yes. Oh, right. The Bengals, the third wide receiver. I asked my good friend Charlie Goldsmith, who covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. He said our team is very fun. It's very fun. And he said that the Ravens, having all the Ravens is good, apparently, because of the offensive coordinator. This is his second year, and now they're
Sounds cooking.
Like it's good to have the Ravens. Yeah, they're getting more. They're gelling. Yeah, so it's good. I'm whatever that means, I'm pretty excited.
Thing I forgot about football is that they do the first game before the other games on that Thursday night.
Yeah.
And that's Ravens Chiefs.
Oh,
so we'll be,
oh, man.
We got all these Ravens and that's okay, my birthday.
Well, oh, so this could be either a great start to the season, or we'll just be despondent. This could ruin your wedding weekend for how much you're going to care about this.
Oh,
anyway. Let us know, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We'll tweet out our team, and we'll do our best to make you guys, the football fans listening to this, we'll do our best to make you proud.
Oh,
thank you to Andrew Hartz.
You know, we should let listeners propose trades for us.
Yeah, let us know who
if you have any fantasy football advice for us.
Yeah, let us know who we should already be trying to trade, I guess would be helpful. Anyway, thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for drafting Amon-Ra St. Brown. We will be back on Friday. And yeah, this is a fun show. Hope you guys enjoyed. We'll talk to you all very soon. Goodbye.